Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. And we're kind of hot up in here this evening. We're going to be talking about this evening trauma and drama in the black community. And we're going to have a special guest. Ms. Sabrina Martin is our guest from the Trauma Center here in Baltimore, Maryland. And we also have our panelists, Michael Thomas, Vernon Street, I see Rico Crawley, Mr. Bill Gooden, and as always, my co-host, my partner, longtime friend, Satabi Jahi, who always brings us powerful information. And so before we get started talking about drama and everything else that we need to talk about, we're going to let this brother give us some good news first. Brother Satabi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David. Yes, and as we always open up this call with reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich of Black Choice. And the reading for the day, July 19th. Don't leave me hanging. A world without dreams and hopes is no world at all. And that quote is from Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. One day, a wishing well in the center of a shopping mall captured the attention of three small children, two boys and a girl. As they leaned over the guardrail, the shimmering coins in the bottom of the water caught their eye. Wow, look at all of that money, one exclaimed. There must be at least $100 down there. The other one says, looks like closer to $1 million, his tiny companion blurted out. I bet we could go get some. Oh, yeah, how? We can make a chain. We can hang on each other. I'll hold your feet, and you can grab her feet, and she can lean over and scoop up some of the dimes and the nickels. The little girl's face clouded over. She seemed very unhappy about their plan. As one of the boys began to climb over the retainer, she tugged on his shirt and cried out, oh, no, you can't do that. You know, you'll steal the dreams and wishes of all of the people who threw their money in that well. How often have we sat innocently by and seen friends and family steal the dreams of others? Through words of doubt or negative thoughts, we participated in a crime. Do your friend a favor. Believe in their dreams. Today I will call a friend and share their hopes and dreams. And this is so true in our community. You know, you come up with an idea and people tell you 99 ways in which it can't be done, as opposed to trying to find a way to help you be able to do it and achieve it, especially when you go into something like business for yourself. So, you know, the thing is, we need to make sure that we don't steal other people's dreams or steal their hopes, you know, but encourage them, encourage them, encourage them, encourage them. And pretty sure that tonight's guest is going to have some encouraging words for people who've gone through trauma and drama. And, you know, I'm excited to hear how Ms. Sabrina Martin is going to cover that topic. And so, with that said, David, I'm going to turn it back over to you, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. As always, you're bringing good news. You know, thinking of, I don't know if you call it drama or trauma, but, you know, death often brings a lot of that on. And unfortunately, you know, these things happen, going to happen. Death always takes place. And I just happened to go to a funeral this morning of an old girlfriend that I grew up with since I was, say, about 12 years old. And you know, I don't know about anybody else, but when someone close to you pass on, you know, it brings up a lot of what you call memories, some good and some bad. And I remember this young lady got caught up in some bad things when she was real young, and she was in the shock trauma unit one time. And I recall going there and seeing all of these tubes and everything. Beautiful young lady, had to see her in that state. And that kind of traumatized me in a sense, because, you know, we didn't know she was, at that time, whether she was going to make it or not. And just at the funeral today, all of a sudden, I kind of relived that moment. And not only that, but, you know, when you go back, when your mind goes back into that state, it conjures up more trauma and drama around those periods. And then it conjures some of the things that you've been through. And so I'm talking about this was happening about probably over 40 years ago. And here, these things can still connect with you, because I know how memory works, but that feeling comes back. And I can imagine what so many of us go through, not only things from the past, but real life tragedies, right? You know, right at the moment. And then to tack this on whatever going on with you now, with you or your family or friends. And then you got all of this other stuff that you've been loving around for all the years. And it's amazing. God, you know, is a powerful God, because it's amazing how some of us can still function after all the drama and trauma we've been through. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we got someone who comes on, because I remember when people were talking about firefighters, they say most people in the forest, everybody else running away, and they running to it. And so I wanted to ask you, Ms. Martin, could you unmute yourself, first of all? And I want to ask you just, you know, before we get, you know, heavy into this conversation about trauma and drama, especially in the Black community, what made you go run to trauma?
My life experience as a mom with a special needs son, and a mom who has a son that suffered from the addiction of substance use. And it was a very traumatic experience for me. My background is addiction counseling and mental health. And I can see all the pain and the trauma that our community is facing. So that prompted me to just want to be a part of the solution.
Okay. And so now that you, how long have you been doing this?
So I've been working with Dr. Humphrey for almost 2 years.
Okay.
However, I've been in this field for about 9 years.
Okay. And can you kind of let people know what you do with this trauma unit that you're involved with?
Okay, so I'm the assistant to Dr. Humphrey, the chief of the trauma team, and we actually go out to the crime scenes and we talk to the victims and we help them to get, you know, resources. We pray with them. We listen to them. And we are there as a sense of support while they're going through these traumatic experiences, like watching their loved ones be shot or stabbed, or, you know, just trauma in general. It was a little baby that got ran over in East Baltimore, you know, by accident. You know, he ran in the street and, you know, his mom was there, threw herself in front of him, tried to save him, but, you know, he succumbed to his injuries. And so those events that are so unexpected and so traumatizing, you know, we are there to help people to kind of like get through that event the best that, you know, we know how, and just to give them the support that they desperately need at that moment. Just because the police on the scene is one thing, but to have somebody there with your best interest is what, you know, we find is most helpful.
Yeah, I can imagine it at such a time this, because I've seen footage of, and actually seen it myself in real time, when I've been around a lot of shooting back in the day. And I even actually seen several people get killed right in front of me. And to watch life, you know, to go out somebody, it's a traumatic experience. And then, you know, like, them kind of things never leave you. So when you say you offer services, what type of service do you offer people when when people go through all these various types of trauma?
So we offer referral services. Okay, so we try to, and so I'm a peer support, so I can actually talk to a mom or a family member or caregiver that is dealing with a traumatic experience or stressors related to caring for someone who's going through, you know, an undesirable situation. But what we do is we partner with a lot of organizations in Baltimore City, so we are able to actually give a warm handoff, you know, to like Roberta's House for grief counseling, or if they're in need for like assistance to get barriers removed because they haven't been able to go back to work because this experience has just taken over their, you know, existence for temporarily, right? Then we help them to get financial assistance, you know, food and things of that nature. We help them to get counseling, mental counseling outside of grief. You know, that mental piece is very important. And we realize that, you know, sometimes in our communities, people frown upon counseling, which can be very healing, right? The process of counseling can be very healing. And we try to get them to understand, you know, if they're in that place and receptive, you know, how beneficial it could be for their healing and moving forward.
Then that's a task within itself, you know, because I know we have in the Black community, we have a stigma that, you know, we don't do mental health. You know, we okay. We got this thing. And but yet, we are the most traumatized people in the world, I believe, because of not only our history, but the things that, you know, because systematic things that we up under all the time, you know, the employment situation, economics, and everything else, that the average person, you know, really needs some time to sit down and talk to somebody. So how do you kind of, what would you say to us as a people when it comes to counseling, you know, from your perspective?
So the way I would approach it is I would ask, first of all, what is the reason someone is apprehensive about receiving counseling? You know, like, what is their reason? And then once they let me know, you know, their feelings and concerns, I try to address each concern, you know, and then I also let them know that I've been in counseling for years and it worked for me, you know, and like you said, in our community, people are misinformed, and that's a big part. You know, education is kind of like a key to success. We all know that, well, I mean, pretty much you can see that Baltimore City is lacking in that education piece. That's a big piece, right? Mm-hmm. So when you are able to open people's minds and when they are comfortable with you and know that you have their best interest at heart, then they're more apt to listen and, you know, just to trust. And I just ask people to try it, because if you tried everything else and it's not working, counseling could definitely be one of those things, you know, could help you move on and help you to heal. And the people who actually help you are impartial, like they're clinically trained. If you have heart condition or diabetes, which a lot of, you know, our folks do, high blood pressure, all those things, you go right to a doctor or a clinician, you know. So if you can go to a doctor for your physical ailments, your mental ailment, your mental health is just as important, if not more so important. And I just try to convey that to them.
Yeah, I can believe that, because, you know, I had an issue one time. You know, I keep it real on this show. You know, it's like I said, no shame in my game, because I know the truth will set people free. And so that's why I tell my truth. And, you know, there was years ago, I went to a situation, what they call it depression. And I recall just sitting there for days on end, just sit, have a TV on, and wouldn't do, barely eat, but just sit there all day long. And didn't have no get up. And I used to get up and do all kinds of stuff, but didn't have any get up and go. But I remember my mother was in a hospice situation. And we had what they something called pull the plug, but somehow she survived, and she's still with us to this day. And this was several years ago. But at the time, they sent her home. And I only lived about 3 or 4 blocks away from her. And this is when it hit me. And I know we were trying, I know some of the family members were trying to take turns to spend time with her so she wouldn't be down there by herself, you know. And I'm sitting 2 or 3 blocks away, got all the time in the world, and I couldn't get up to even go to tend to my mother. And then that's when I knew something was really wrong with me. And I started calling around, and I found a place where I did get mental help. And the lady told me, the counselor told me, she said, and I told her what was wrong with me, why I was, you know, all these things that I had on my shoulder. She kind of laughed and chuckled a little bit. She said, if I had that much going on me, I would need some help too. And so, but then, you know, but the way she explains things to me, held up a lot of things, you know. So that's why I appreciate people like you, and I encourage people, if you don't want to, you know, at least seek help, but if you don't, talk to somebody, you know, because I do know if you allow, if you sit around and you allow things to build up on you sometime, it can make it worse. And so, you know, Sabrina, we have quite a few people on here tonight, and some of them deal with are beginning to deal with some things in trauma and drama, you know, nationwide. They're going to have podcasts on them, and we're trying to dig, because we know that this is a serious, serious issue in the Black community. But before we get a little bit deep into that, I want to get a little bit deep with you first. You mentioned that you say you was a drug counselor.
Well, I actually went to school for mental health and addiction counseling, right? So
okay.
I counsel people through addiction, and I help them to, you know, get the services they need as far as a clinician, because I don't take on that piece. You know, I try to keep them separate, because for me, because of my experiences, the addiction part is so specific, and so many people are hooked on something, right? And be it food, sex, drugs, you know, and they can't really, even the internet, like we are addicted to the internet these days, right? Social media,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people can't recognize that. So I kind of help them to recognize that piece. And then I let other people deal with the mental health aspect, who can get more deeper in it than I can, right? And who they can trust. Because I do realize that in our community, for years, generationally, we've been like, what happens in this house stays in this house, and all these
yep.
other things,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, women are supposed to be so strong. You know, we nurture everybody. We care for everyone. But my whole focus, you know, with my caregivers is self-care. Because if you can't care for yourself, and if you don't recognize what's going on with you, and you don't have the ability to deal with that, then you're not going to be any good for anyone else, because, you know, your cup is empty, right? But everybody's constantly pulling something from you. So I kind of focus on that piece, and I have people that I partner with who actually work on the mental health piece.
Okay. You know, before I open up the lines and, you know, let the other guests online with us right now talk to you, you got an upcoming event, and I want you to, you know, share a little bit about that before we get started.
Sure. So we're having a summit, which is next Saturday, a community trauma summit, right? And it's from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. It's in Baltimore City at the Christian Baptist Fellowship Church. And that's 3702 West Rogers Avenue. And we just have community residents and leaders come together to discuss and address the trauma that we experience. But our focus is really on the healing piece, right? Because we all know, even from the A scores, children experience trauma like every day. And we always say children are so resilient and they can bounce back. And that is so not true. And until recently, you know, we just become aware of the A scores and what it means and how it adds to the trauma and the stresses and the diseases of our community. And like I said, we're the ones who haven't been addressing it. Other communities, other races of people have their children in counseling, sometimes in elementary school, right, to address some of these things that they see going wrong, and we don't. So it compiles, right? So we're having this summit, and we're going to be discussing topics like education, which is so important, trauma, like the ACE scores, abuse risk management, elder abuse, substance abuse, mental health, physical health, wellness, you know, what that means and what that looks like for everybody, because it's different, right? Depression, domestic violence, which is so big in our community because of so many different factors, and how to recognize the signs of a pedophile, because that piece we miss a lot, but it's so important as well, because we trust these individuals around our babies sometimes. And like I said, sometimes we're like, what happens in this house stays in this house, and they're being taken advantage of, and they're being, you know, molested or groomed. So we teach caregivers and moms how to actually recognize those signs of pedophilia. And it's going to be open forum. We're going to have 8 guest speakers there just to help the community to get the information that they might not necessarily get from other types of summits.
Yeah, well, I plan on being I was invited to attend, I guess, because I got so much drama and trauma. But I'm definitely going to plan to be there, because
yeah.
I do understand, you know, the need for us, especially us, that we need, to get all the help that we can get, because we're such a resilient people with all of this trauma and drama. Can you imagine what we would be like if we had some help in some of these areas?
Absolutely. And if we came together, because we are really trying to adapt that it does take a village, right? Mm-hmm. And are the village. And we can't give up on our youth. I mean, you can say the youth of this and the youth of that, but what have they been exposed to? Who have really come to their defense? Who has really been their advocate, right? And so they're out there doing the best they can with what they have, because they've been mistreated and cheated for so long, right?
Right. You hit it right on the head. I'm going to open up the line, but I'm going to share one thing with the audience, you know, about when you mentioned children, because like I said, it just took me back. I recall in the kindergarten, and it was nap time, and I just jumped up and started singing, because I used to like to sing. So, you know, I jumped up and just sang. I mean, singing out loud. I was singing my little heart out. And the teacher told me, shut up. And all the little children started laughing at me. You know, I know, it seems like to anybody else may be just a simple thing, a simple act. You talk to them, shut up all the time. Mm-hmm. But for me, when that happened to me, when I traced my steps back, that's when I became, some may call it, introvert. You know, I wouldn't speak out loud from that point on. You know, I wouldn't even sing, you know, that took away that dream that I had and everything. And that stayed with me until I was about two or three years ago when I realized, because I did a thing called the 7 levels of why, and it takes you back to a lot of things, why you do this and why you do that. And then that's when I discovered when that happened. And so I could imagine in this day and time, the way things are now, it seems like I have more freedom than the average child has today. But the way these children are closed up and with diseases and everybody, I mean, bullying and cyberbullying and everybody blinging. And if you ain't blinging, you know, that's trauma. And I can't imagine the stuff that's heaped up on them. And the mental state that they, you know, some of them are in. And so I appreciate you, you know, you and team effort, what you're doing for next week, because it's really needed in our community, and I applaud you for that. But here we go. So, ladies and gentlemen, those who want to share some experience about trauma and drama and your take on it in the Black community, because that's what I deal with. You can talk about it in general, but that's what I deal with. And so I want to introduce you to somebody before. Daniel, can you unmute yourself? Because Mr. White, he too is starting a program when he's dealing with a lot of mentorships, especially dealing with young, especially in sports, because they go through another a circle, a trauma, you know, because they got to be the best, and you know they constantly being bombarded with all types of from coaches and everybody else, you know, you have to be this, you know, and you have to eat this way, you have to do that. It's a lot of pressure on them, and so I especially wanted you to meet him. But I see Daniel, if you can unmute yourself, I appreciate it, sir. And I want y'all to meet, because I think y'all would have a lot in common sometimes for future, endeavors that, you know, y'all can intertwine with. I don't know, maybe he's not available right now. Okay. And I'm going to try to invite him out next week, too.
Because he actually talked about the mentoring, the youth in sports, right?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
And I can relate to that. And I actually talked to Dr. Humphrey and my husband about it once I got off the last call we had, because my son, who suffers from addiction, right? He played lacrosse. So we lived in Ellicott City, and so he went to Mount Harbor, which is a pretty decent school. He played lacrosse and football for years, right? Until his 12th grade year, and his grades fell. And I just said, wow, had he had a mentor, because he loved sports. I said, wow, had he had a mentor that actually stepped in and held him to task and did that, because I was a single mom then, and, you know, I was divorced, and you know, his dad was in prison. That's traumatic right there. You know what I'm saying? And all he was going through, the transition from a young man to an adult, you know, I cannot imagine, because I'm not a man, what he was going through, especially a black man. So, I mean, once he said it, it really resonated with me, because it's so important. Had he had that, my son got accepted to a college. He didn't go. He went to Lincoln Tech. Now it's called Lincoln Tech. He went to Lincoln Tech and didn't stay. He stayed there maybe like 5 months, right? But so had he had a strong black man that, you know, helped guide him and gave him some structure and some support, right, I think it would have made all the difference.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it would have, too, you know, and so, again, you know, like I say, I don't think any of us, you know, I think all of us can deal with this issue, because, you know, if you're black, you know, that's enough trauma in this country, you know, to put on a person to last a lifetime, and it does, pretty much. But I'm going to bring you to another gentleman. I'm going to call some people out. I'm going to talk to you, Mr. Michael Thomas. He has a program called 1,000 Great Minds, but it doesn't have too much to do. He dealt with more of economic stand piece. But speaking of this subject matter, Mr. Thomas, can you unmute yourself first and foremost? And I would like for you to have a small dialogue with him, because, you know, economics, it can be trauma too. When you can't pay your bills, you may not have a decent place, or may have no place, about to get put out and stuff, you know, which so many of us have been, you know, over the years and stuff like this. So, Mr. Thomas, kind of explain to who you are and what you do, sir.
Yes, I'm Michael Thomas from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I have developed a program that enables every desiring person in the country to get a house and transportation with no rent, mortgage, car payments, or debt to pay. It is kind of a mammoth type of endeavor, because it involves everyone who's renting. It doesn't matter whether you're living in a mobile home park or in an RV or in the homeless shelter. It covers every desiring person. And it's kind of a paradise concept. I call it paradigm paradise, because it does not bring forth all the obstacles that the person has to face in getting a house and personal transportation. So we come up with these no's, like no mortgage, no interest, no credit, no down payment, no rent, no job, no loan, no grant, no government aid, no sponsor, none of that, because these are obstacles. And so I wrote the program that is a merciful program that accommodates any desiring person who'd like to have a house and personal transportation without the debt. And it's unbelievable to most people, but I'm just one sperm among 7 billion, and I can imagine the magnitude of the collective effort of even a billion people in comprehending and having the same mindset that I have, where things could be turned around overnight. And I wanted to ask you a couple questions, Ms. Martin, about what you think the two core central driving forces, what's the core central driving force of this trauma? And also, historically, have you seen it elevate in a certain score, a certain 20-year time frame?
Well, it's definitely elevating, I think, because we have, you know, been awakened with things like the ACE scores and how that relates to adulthood, right? And the way that the brain is not even developing, and these children are faced with all of these, you know, situations that they don't know how to internalize or deal with. So it like goes off into other little dimensions in their brain. Excuse me. And for the first part, I think that it's no one specific thing. I think that, you know, education is a big key to it, especially, you know, that the initial education, elementary school, middle school. You know, if you guys been watching the news at all with Baltimore, like, they have people that 1%, their GPAs is literally 1%. You know, it's ridiculous that these children are being set up to fail, right? Not only do they have to walk through garbage to get to school, once they get there, they don't have heat, air conditioning, they don't have the books that they need, and then they're not getting anything out of their days at school, right? They're being promoted and not learning anything. also the financial literacy. It's like we don't have it because we have been so left behind. Economically, we've been not paid living wages, you know, and we don't get taught about credit scores and things of that nature. You know, you get a credit card, you just max it out, and people just don't pay it. So we don't understand the ramifications of those actions that we take as young people. And I believe that it's just a compilation of things. I don't believe it's just, you know, one or two things. I think it's just a lot of things that compiles together to make these, that affects these children in a traumatic way, and adults as well.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to that with a question and a statement. And the question is the statement itself. Is that, do you think that we're messing around with bad company? You know, company that biblically speaking we should not be around, you know, that we should withdraw from if we intend to take command of our own destinies, you know, to not enable someone else to have their hands on our destinies in any shape, form, or fashion. Do you think we have mixed up with bad company?
Absolutely, absolutely. And ironically, my nonprofit is called Determine Your Destiny just for that reason, right? Because your destiny is yours to determine. I think that, you know, on a religious aspect, you know, I think that, you know, if people have faith and they know that it's a plan for your life and you are worthy and God has you here for a reason and a purpose and you just have to figure out what that purpose is and work in your gifts, right, I think that we'll be a better people. But as we know, a lot of people, because of what's going on, the social media and all those other things, they lose that peace, right? So they're not even getting that faithfulness. They're not getting that that acknowledgement that there is a higher power. And so they go with the flow. You know, their neighborhood is full of, you know, undesirable people. They see people on the corner. They know they're the ones that's driving the BMWs. They're the ones that's, you know, have the nice tennis shoes and have money in their pockets. So that's what they gravitate towards. So, of course, I definitely think that that's a big factor. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, Vern and Senior, you want to chime in? Unmute yourself, sir.
Yeah, also I would like to say something also. We have to know that we as a people, we haven't arrived yet. You know, a lot of people think we arrived and they don't try to believe in self-improvement. You know, I could be 80 or 90 years old. I still believe that it's something else that I need to learn, something else, those pieces are, we see lack that, we have to do something else. You know, we have to add, we have to learn, about finances. We have to learn about making ourselves better. If we know we're not good with time management, that's something right there. If we know we're not good with finances, that's something right there. You know, until we reach the 100% or a certain pinnacle, you know, and dealing with different situations, then we know that there's room for improvement, you know, not waiting on someone else to do it. You know, I'm learning every day how to do something better, you know, how to make my community better, how I can help you, how I can help myself. You know, if I'm experiencing trauma or if I'm experiencing something, I want to find out how I can get it out of my life.
All right. Okay. You know, like I say, I got my partner on here because he does a show immediate right after this, and I just want to get to him before I get to Daniel or anybody else. Mr. Bill Gooden, Bill, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to say good evening to everybody. But Dr. Humphrey, I've been knowing for a long time. I'm a very personal friend. I just want to say again, just thank you for all he continued to do. But I was just basically listening because I guess that, you know, when you're talking about trauma, look, it's so many different kinds of traumas that we would need hours to really talk about it, right?
Real.
You know, so I mean, I think that, you know, probably the biggest trauma is just the whole fact that people can't be honest about their trauma because people are ashamed to deal with certain things. You know what I mean? Certain things is a taboo in our communities, right? So, you know, you don't really have nobody to tell about them problems, so you try to keep them to yourself, which sometimes just fests the other problems. So I guess that's basically all I want to say, because, like I said, just too much to just talk about in such a short time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Daniel, are you unable to unmute yourself?
Here I am.
Okay.
Good evening, everybody.
Yes, but I didn't know.
I really apologize.
That's no problem. But I don't know, did you hear what Sabrina said about her son and Mr. Shea? Can you just look briefly, Sabrina, share with Daniel what you said about your son?
Yes. Hi, Daniel. I was sharing that my son, when he was in high school, well, actually, he played at Northwood when they was champions. He played football, like, all his young life, right? Then when he got to high school, he went to Mount Hebron High School, and he played football. And then he played lacrosse as well. And when he got to the 12th grade, his grades started dropping, and, you know, his attitude and his mood changed. I guess that's when, he was experimenting with marijuana. All those things played a factor. And I was just thinking that if he had a mentor, it would have just probably made all the difference for him, because he would have had someone to support him, you know, and guide him and give him, like, a man's aspect, because his dad was in prison. And, I think that was another attributing factor to him not, just rebelling, right? But I know that this is a love of his, like a passion of his, playing football, because he's always done it. And he was really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking that's an awesome program that you have, because these young black men, who are in sports, they just need some direction and some guidance and some help along the way. And they could probably be more successful, especially with the grades, because you have to keep those grades up, right, in order to be able to play. And just
right.
Your mind that, too.
Right. Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. He does need a mentor. From middle school, I like to start at the grassroots level. Kids coming in from fifth grade, I ran programs at the school I was teaching at as a dean, as an athletic director. Kids being exposed to sports itself, and not only that, exposing the parents to the sports, if they so choose to be exposed. Kids coming from the fifth grade to the sixth grade in the middle school where I was in Delaware, Pennsylvania, this is when it starts. This is when they're actually learning something about the competitive nature. If they, even if they're in little league of some form or fashion, but getting up in the middle schools, you start to be around coaches. You start to be around other personalities. Some kids can have it better than other kids. Some develop envious or jealousy. Maybe you have a good athlete, but he doesn't have all the tools. He doesn't have the family support. He may have to ride home with his friend. He may be stuck after practice. He may not have there's a whole lot that goes into it. I may not have my grades up to speed. I may be a good player, but my grades are lacking. So, mentoring is very, very important, and it's significant for a mentor to be trained to be able to identify with the student athlete. They have to create trust. They have to be able to create confiding in the individual that's mentoring me. They have to understand where I'm coming from, my grassroots, my family structure, my community, my atmosphere. They're going to understand a lot about a student athlete when he's in school and he's participating in athletics. In our country, and I say this because I grew up through it. I came through it. I was that individual. I needed it. The guys at the park kind of raised me as a student athlete. And those were older guys that came before. But it showed me what not to do. When I saw them hanging out, they were doing their thing. And some of them would tell me to go home. The lights were coming on. You got to get home. Some of them would pick me to be on their team, put me under their arm, different things that to guide me. So when I got to the point when I said, Lord, and you said spirituality, I said, Lord, give me something. When my career is all said and done, give me something that I can give back that no other child had to go through what I went through as a student athlete. And the Spirit spoke, and it said, give them mentors. I'm going to give you the whole testimony. It came, how am I going to give them mentors? You got mentors and college graduates looking to give back in the community. Some of them coming out to try to be coaches, to try to do different things. Use them. Use the people who have gone through that curriculum of balance in academics and athletics. Former high school student athlete, train them to be mentors. They're all across the country. That's why the organization is a national organization. It's not a community, but that's a big thing because you look at the YMCAs, you've got the boys clubs. They're big. So you got to do something national where you're going to address student athletes. And I say this again, our Olympians, look where they came from. Look at the community. They got stories. They tell all kinds of stories. Mom and dad died. Mom and dad separated. I was an orphan. I came from a socioeconomic structure that was struggle. So there's a whole lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of mental illness that goes on with these student athletes in the grassroots levels, middle school, high school. And so, unfortunately, I understand what you're saying it burns in my heart because I lived it. I came through it. I kind of had to stay away from things and find a way to get to these kids at the grassroots levels. And it's done. It's done. It just has to get on the platform and be exposed.
Okay.
Because we need it in this country. Look at our Olympians. Look at our colleges. Mentors. We mentor. That's why I say pretty much everybody helped build their community by playing high school sports. They took that money, put it in the schools. You played the games. You build the communities. You talk about the student athletes that came through here that were skyrocketing, jumping out of the gym, doing everything else, and we're not using them.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to, because Daniel's ready to start a program or, you know, a podcast that we're going to be addressing some of these issues. And Daniel, I'd like to extend you an invitation. This Saturday, I want some of you came on late, but I want Sabrina to reiterate this event coming up Saturday.
Yeah, so we're having a trauma summit this Saturday in Baltimore City, and it's from 9 until 1 p.m. It's on Rogers Avenue. I can actually put, some information in the chat, or I can give it to David.
Please do. Put it in the chat room. We appreciate that, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Excuse me, I'm scheduled to be there. I'm on top of that. I want to get there and see what's going on. So I heard about that. That's okay. I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, because we want to talk about, you know, the issues, of course, that people are concerned with, but we also want to talk about some solutions.
Myself, that's right.
Yeah, I'll be talking about substance use and being a caregiver, right, and just how to address that piece. And just to let people know that they're not alone, because sometimes we sit in this stuff and we think that we're the only ones going through it. I know personally, I didn't know any of my peers that were going through what I was going through with my son, right? Because I lived in Howard County, and my son's drug of choice as he got when he turned 19 was heroin. None of my friends that I, you know, that I was aware of, children was using heroin. So it was a big depression for me. And being though my background was in addiction counseling and mental health, everything I learned went right out the window. Right, because I'm a mom first, and I was trying to save my son. So it just that clinical side just wasn't there for me at that time. I was in a moment, and I was in dealing with trauma, right? And I was just overwhelmed, and I was hurt too. And it was like I lost my child, right? But I didn't physically lose him, thank God, but you know, he was gone, and I didn't know what to do. So.
Yeah.
I use my experiences with navigating the system and as a person, like as a caregiver, and I just try to bring that some light to those things and try to remove some barriers out of these people's lives, because help them to remove some barriers. Because some it can be some small thing that's in their way, and they can't see it until they actually know somebody else can bring it out.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. This number I got here is 1-804. Is that you, Dr. Pender?
Yes, it is.
Good. Now, here's another gentleman who deals with a lot of people on mental issues. Can you, Dr. Penn, explain who you are, sir. Who are you?
Yeah. I'm a product of the government of heaven, and my sole purpose is to live the gospel, preach the gospel, and live the gospel and set people free through the living word. And what we've been discussing on this broadcast, and I appreciate everyone, and I think someone touched on it, is that we have to get back to our roots. And the very roots that we have is we've gotten away from God. That's 101. And what happened, the system that we live in actually have used us and manipulated us for years, and we began to love it. In the 1960s, we had the revolution. I was back in the 70s. I was in the civil rights. And we, our forefathers, put their trust in the Lord and led into their own understanding. And what happened, they made it through. It was no problem. They didn't have as much as we have now. We've gotten comfortable with having things. But one of the things that I want to point out is that Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the had the Great Society back in the day. And in the Great Society, the welfare system grew like crazy, because then you could have public housing, but the father couldn't be there. And that's where this stuff started. Society gives, but it takes. And when you don't have a father in the home, then things actually go awry. But in the 50s, you have fathers in the home, and most of these guys didn't go to jail. But what happened when you don't have a father in the home, you don't have a role model, so the television teaches you everything that you need to know. And right today, 90% of our product problems come from us and television. But if we get back into the churches, and this is the pastor's responsibility, because they got the key to all the problems in Baltimore all over, is found in the Bible. Everything that you that we're discussing that's happening to our people, the answers are right there in the Bible. If we believe in God's word, it will take care of it. It's not a problem whatsoever. But we put our dependency on man. And when you put your dependency on man, he's going to hook you up the wrong way.
Yes. Yes, I agree with that, because, you know, like I say, you know, like I said, people know I deal, I'm into media. And see, and media plays such a powerful thing, like you mean, like Dr. Pender mentioned, television. But you know what else it plays on too? You know, when you used to see what they call black movies, and then you know they would portray the ministers or pastors as pimps. You know, just using people. And so, you know, and that sends subliminal messages out there. And even though we do have people who actually does that. But at this, but not the whole, you know, not, you know, but see, but that's one way how they integrate your mind. And if you see somebody who's in the pulpit and look like they doing swell for themselves, you know, and that mindset start to go interchange with one another, and so people run away from the church. But I do recall, before anything got happened in the community, they went to the church, the civil rights movement. Anything, you know, anything, little league teams, anything you can think of was brought out of the church. That's where they went at to organize. And but now, like I say, a lot of that has gotten based. So we have to go back, like Doc say, go back to our roots. And it's good that they're having this at the church, that, you know, this summit. This, and so so everything seems like it's lining up. And it's a great thing that we have in this discussion on this, because like Bill said, it's going to take a whole lot of discussion, because, you know, this thing is going so deep from generation to generation when we're dealing with some of this trauma, because it has been handed down. You know, like I tell people all the time, you know, my mother and father, I know they meant well, don't do this. You know, they tell me, don't stop doing that. And I ask why, because I told you so. You know, you know, I mean, what? How do I supposed to proceed with that, you know? But then I always had an aunt or uncle or some older other person would come around, come here, boy, let me tell you why. And see, I learned from that, you know. And they, you know, so they gave me, you know, the reason why I shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that, and it makes sense to me. But when you tell me because I said so, then you leave me out to hang, so to speak. You know, and so, you know, I know you're supposed to put trust and faith into your mother and father sometimes, but, you know, but sometimes you need answers. And thank God, Sabrina, that you and your team, y'all putting together this summit, this upcoming summit, which, like I said, I'm planning on attending. I encourage y'all, everybody on here in this area who would plan on doing in this area, to attend, because I think what's going to take place, I think what should take place is that we need to have discussion nationwide. And I think because the National Black Unity News does have a nationwide platform, I want to talk to you, Sabrina, and already talking to Dr. Humphrey by returning to the publication. And let's talk about this thing nationwide and get some things not only in Baltimore, because the same things happening in Baltimore happening all over the country. And
that's right. Yeah.
And so, you know, and a lot of us, like I say, it's coming up with these podcasts, which will be broadcast nationwide. And so so that's why I'm so excited about a lot of things, because we don't own a lot of media, but everything starts with a start. And we are starting, you know, because I'm so pleased because several members on here are going to do podcasts. We're doing directories. We do newspapers. We're doing everything we can get our hands on right now to share good news, you know, solution-oriented information. And Sabrina, you know, I'm so glad that you came on with us this evening. You know, we don't have a lot of time left, but, you know, we control this as well. And so I'm going to open up the call, the line, so to speak, to anybody on here who want to ask Sabrina a question or just have a concern relating to drama and trauma. Anyone?
I don't particularly have a question. I'm going to attend this function on the 24th. But one of the things, if I could, put out, David, the National Student Athletic Society is a large organization. I'm looking for CEOs, and advisory board members. It's a national organization, ladies and gentlemen. We're partnering with the Bo Biden Foundation. That's President Biden's association with his son. We got to deal with some state's attorneys. We got to deal with the mayor. We got to deal with the governor. We got to deal with the board, school boards. We got to deal with politics. We got to deal with lawyers. We got to deal with pastors. And we got to deal with corporate presidents and CEOs. Where all the dollars are, this is nationwide, because this is how big, when we talk about the Olympics, we got to get up in the midst of that. I've had the Olympic Committee call me and ask, well, they want the program. I had a lot of people want the program. They want to try, and I talked about it before. So I say this to say, I'm looking for some people who are committed to student athletics, because our grassroots level is where we have to focus on our student athletes, because they're the ones that's helping build the communities through their athleticism in the schools.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, one more thing, and I don't know if he don't like speaking out too public sometimes, but Rico, can you unmute yourself? Because he deals with an organization called God-Given Hands. And another thing is, too, see, we don't understand all the time. You know, he goes out and feeds the homeless, the hungry, and the needy. You know, there's a difference between them. And sometimes you never know why a person is hungry or in need or something for this or this, that sometimes. And I can't even imagine, because I've never been in that situation. I always had something to eat and some place to lay my head, but there's a multitude of people who have come back from the military, from all kinds of other things, to end up, you know, homeless. You know, so some people just can't pay the money, you know, right now. And working. People working in homeless. And so, Sabrina, I know y'all deal with a lot. I know you say you bring up a lot of sources, you know, what you deal with. But I can imagine how much trauma that can be on a person.
Absolutely.
And you say that you often run across people in those situations when you're out there?
Yeah, doing peer support, I've definitely have referred a lot of people to transitional housing and to the House of Roof and, you know, just shelters because they're in homeless situations. And the need is just so great in so many different areas, right, for our population. And what I noticed the most is some people just don't feel worthy. And I think that ties back to, you know, like the religious piece. You know, unfortunately, we were a praying people. We prayed ourselves out of everything, pray about it. We prayed about everything. And we lost that, right? Somewhere along the way, we have lost that, you know, I guess through all the, you know, the politicking and all the, you know, the things that's going wrong with the system. We can see what's going wrong with the system. And people have just lost their faith. You know, even with my oldest son, he wasn't a believer. And, you know, he grew up, you know, really religious. And once he got a certain age, he just stopped believing in God. And I attribute a lot of that to social media. Everybody wants everything right now. You know, mm-hmm. if it's not tangible, they don't believe it, right? Because they can go to the internet and they can Google something, bam, it's right there. And so it's hard to believe. Once you are feeling so low and, you know, so you've been so oppressed for so long, it's kind of hard to believe that there is a God out there that, you know, you can rely on, that has your best interest at heart when your children don't have milk. Or when, you know, you're about to get evicted. Or when your son, you know, Dr. Humphrey and I and the trauma team was at one of our teammates' funerals for his brother recently, like 2 weeks ago. And I happened to run across a childhood friend there. And, you know, her and I saw them on Facebook because we're friends, but that her son was murdered. He was stabbed, you know, last month. And her other son was shot. She had two sons. Her other one was shot and murdered in 2013. So I'm like, you know, these people are so desperate, so broken. You know, these things keep happening over and over, and they feel like nobody cares. And it's hard to believe in God when your faith is so shook. When your faith is, it's a lack of faith, right? You don't even have it at some point because you're so low. Right, you've been through so much, and you don't have a way to deal with these things and these issues. And just imagine burying two—I cannot imagine burying two children. Right, two of her only two sons are gone. Right, so these people are dealing with this over and over and over and over and over and over again. Their neighbors are dealing with it. You know, then they hear the gunshots. They see that, you know, the lights get turned out. They're hungry. You know, they're paid $12 an hour. You know what I mean? And it's just all these things, and they just don't have a way. And I guess to just come to terms with the fact that if they just have faith and believed in God and followed a certain mold, you know, some principles, and just give their, you know, children some guidance, and just, like he said, fall back from the TV sometimes. The songs that these children listen to, man, I listened to a song the other day, and I'm not kidding. Had I not been the person that I am, you know, it's easy to see how these children get caught up. You know, they get caught, they believe that this is the life, this is the way, this is what they're supposed to do, because they have all of these people feeding this stuff into their mind every day.
That's right. Bombarded, you know? With it. Yep.
Yeah.
And guess what? You said something very key that kind of triggered, you know, like they used to say in church, you stepped on my toes. You said something about some people don't believe they are worthy.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that, though?
I mean that, you know, they've been told for so long they're inadequate, right? They get treated bad by the police. They see all the dirt and filth in their neighborhoods, right? Mm-hmm. And then in their mind, they just believe that they're not worthy of having nice things. They're not worthy of getting a decent job. They're not worthy of having a good education. They're not worthy of just to have favor in God. Like, I know that I have favor. They say it's not fair. But I know I have it. You understand what I'm saying? And I have faith, right? And that separates me from a lot of my peers, because a lot of people I know just don't believe in God, right? So, and I guess it goes back to, you know, your self-worth. Like, I have incredible self-worth today, you know? And I know people that just feel like they are just, they would be better off dead. Like, you know, they just counting down the days till it's over.
You know what? The reason why I say it struck a nerve, because, you know, it's just more on a spiritual tip and a mental. Somebody can mute themselves. It's a lot of background noise. Okay, I'm gonna have to do it from my end. And but in any case, I was just saying that, you know, there was a time in my life, you know, I did something to my family. You know, I used to act up back in the day. I used to have a drinking problem, and I would act up. And, you know, over the years, you know, I got myself together many years ago and done a lot of wonderful and great things over the years. But there was one thing, when it comes to this thing called forgiveness, and this thing was, you know, I could forgive everybody, and I forgave a lot of stuff I did, because I understood that when you're a child, you act like a child. And I'm not even the same person I was 6 months ago. So we always evolved. But there was this one little issue, and I wasn't even conscious of it, though. You know, I used to tell people, people on here know, they hear me talk about this. I said, I used to help a lot of people do a lot of things. I used to help people make some serious money one time, you know, several times in my life. And I used to wonder why I couldn't make a whole lot of money for me when it comes to me. But, you know, I never really pursued money or anything. But, you know, I believe I had the skills, and I believe that your skills, your gifts will make a way for you. And they have. But, you know, not to what some would say, your cup is running over. Put it that way. My cup wasn't running over. Never did. And but I survived. But just recently, when I told you I went on this journey with this seven levels of why going backwards, it just dawned on me. Because I was able to forgive everything but this one thing. I was unable to forgive myself because of the way I treated my family. And I couldn't even believe I could do something like that. Just meant to me personally. I could never, you know, never, every time I think about it, I just cringe at it. And because I did, you know, because I was unable to forgive myself for those acts back in them days, and I was probably in my 22, 23 or something like that. And therefore, deep down subconsciously, I believed I didn't deserve nothing. Anything I got, it was acceptable. I didn't, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes if you really believe something that you don't believe you should have something, you don't get it. And so it's a lot of us, I believe, have gone through that same, or you just mentioned a lot of things. Sometimes you've been beat down so badly that you don't think you deserve nothing. You know, this, you think that this is your lot in life. And that's why, like I said, again, ladies and gentlemen, that this upcoming program, not just this upcoming program, but all of us, you know, need to get involved with this mental health. We need to get involved and deal with some of this trauma that's been handed down to us generation to generation. And a lot of us, like, you know, we always tease each other. We got a lot of baggage, you know, that we have. But, you know, but when you take that personal inventory, you go back over your life, and one thing, you can't run away from you. You can run away from a lot of other stuff, but you can't run from you. And all of us know that we look in our heart of hearts and really look at ourselves. And if you like me, you always wonder, if you're curious about yourself, because we're always looking for the outside things when we should be looking within. And most important, like Dr. Penda and Sabrina said, we need to look to God. But if you can't even deal with you, you know, how are you going to, you know, sometimes even go out to reach out to a God if you can't even have the mindset to believe that you can do something, you know, that there is a God that can help you and to get you to a certain point. So, Sabrina, again, if anybody else wanted to just chime on in while we have several minutes left, is this, that Sabrina and the trauma team is giving this great event this Saturday here in Baltimore area. But for those of y'all, some of you write articles and stuff, some of you are authors, and a lot of y'all deal with a lot of people, but you know, this discussion, not only do we need to have discussion about trauma and drama, and especially in Black people's lives, but we have to learn how some kind of way to deal with it.
You are unmuted.
Dealing with, they're going to have a whole summit on it, and at least it'll open up the open up the doors to communication, and once we start talking about it, maybe we can do something about it. And so, again, anybody else, before we close out this evening, like to share, you know, something personal about trauma and drama, you want to ask Sabrina a question, this is the time to do so.
I just wanted to say this. I added the information from the flyer in the chat, but I can email the actual flyer to anybody who puts that email in the chat. I will be more than happy to do that. And I wanted to say one other thing too, like as far as the self-worth, we have a lot of moms that are so stressed out, like it's not natural. And I mean, as a woman on this panel, I must say this, right? Mm-hmm. I've been married twice. You know, I have two sons that I raised, right? So I know that, you know, because I believe in the Bible. I believe that a woman is a helper. You know, I believe that, you know, the Bible says a man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat, right? And there's a lot of other things that I definitely believe in the Bible. Those things stand out to me in our generation, right, and especially people I deal with. And I want to say that we have been thrust into a role that is unnatural as women, right? Mm-hmm. And then they call us angry Black women. They're quick to say that, right? But we are so stressed out and so overburdened, right, raising children. You have men that, you know, make these babies. I have to say this, right? They help create these lives. And then they go off, and they might be with another woman with her children and their lives, or they might be in prison, or they might be murdered or whatever. But we are here to, you know, to take on the burden of all of, you know, raising these children. And that is a stressor in itself. And some women don't know how to deal with that because of whatever reason, so many different things come into play. And they might lash out at the kid. And, you know, imagine you 5 years old and your mom is saying things like, you're not going to be crap just like your dad and all these things, you know what I mean? Or, you know, you're a piece of whatever. And I've heard it and I've seen it and I'm sure you guys have as well. And just for the child, that's what I'm saying, growing up hearing these things over and over and over again, and then the police treat you bad. You go to school and, you know, you devalued in school and or you're not getting a proper education. You're not learning about your history that you're from kings and queens. You're not learning about this stuff, right? And it's purposefully, right, that you're not. And then when you grow up, how would you, you know, how are you expected to be positive and have self-worth and feel great about who you are as a human being, right? And why is it the fact that it's okay for black women, because I know a lot of different people, I know Indians, Palestinian people, I've lived in so many different communities that's multicultural, and we are the only, Mexicans, right, you know, Hispanic people, we're the only ones that, you know, don't have a problem just jumping up and jumping ship and leaving our kids for various reasons, our families. And that's another thing that is a big proponent to me for this trauma that we're experiencing. Because it wasn't that, it takes two to make a baby, but it should take two to raise one, right? And we balance each other out. And like I said, a woman is a helper. And that's what God said, right? You know, God mm-hmm. made woman as a helper. So where is mm-hmm. our support? And until we can really, you know, kind of help these children to understand, stop having babies without, you know, being married and, you know, being a person that's going to stick around and help take care of these children, because these children are going to suffer and somebody's going to have to deal with them one day, right? With their anger, with their, you know, lack, you know, because they want to try to survive. They're in survival mode once they get a certain age, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have any support. And so I have to say that piece because that is so important in our communities, right?
Yeah. And let me add this in, too. I have to say this before we go for the National Student Athletic Society. This is not my program. God just used me. This is a program for the kids, because if they come up through here, they're going to run this program. It's not mine. It's the people's. I may not even get to see the program up and running nationwide. God may not even take me there. He just told me to bring it forward. It's not my program. Anyone out there that's going to CEO, they have to understand. This is God-led. It's all written up, got his own 501c3, got his own tax-exempt status, got everything. It's for the kids in school. Once they belong to this organization, they will run it from grade school all the way through high school, college, and in professional. They're going to feed into it. It's a perpetuating system for economics for them, and it's going to keep on feeding back there. It's not my program. I just wrote it and designed it by the breath of God.
All right. Okay.
David, I want to chime in.
Yes. Who was that? Both the two of y'all were trying to chime in. That Michael, go ahead first. And who, that's Satawi?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, you go first, and then Satawi. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, just wanted to respond back to Mrs. Martin. She mentioned about this. She said unnatural, you know, and I agree with that. And for that reason, men walking off on women who have the babies, it's not a solo soldier type arrangement. It's a dual arrangement between the man and the woman. And I think that we need to become more conscious of shoring up one another's, especially as it relates to the mental part of it, shoring up one another in the mental state dimension of life and also the economic state of life. You mentioned, I don't know, I think you said one of your father's children was in jail or something like that. I don't think that men are just bad people, but when you look for jobs and you get a job and you can't make enough money to take care of yourself, your family, or the child, or the woman, it's unnatural. That is definitely unnatural. But that is something we have to be conscious of, and we have to take command. That is the key thing for both everyone, the male and the female, to take command of one another's lives and to make sure that our mental states are up to the top of the bar, as well as the economic state. I remember Ray Caruth, who was a Panther football player, who took part in the murder of his mother's child, his wife's child or girlfriend's child, And I thought that if it was a child support thing, he was wealthy enough to buy an apartment complex and give her the cash flow from the apartment complex. It was a money issue. But this mental thing is what we have to shore up, and the economic thing, so that if men walk away, so to speak, that they have enough sanity like Ray Charles did, even though he was he was wealthy, he left each one of his children $1 million. He had the sanity to do that, and he did it, and that was a great example. And that's what I'm saying. It's just not where the man is walking away and the woman is just laying down there and having a baby. It's a two-way street that we all need to shore up on, and we need to bring in the statues of the Most High in that by understanding, comprehending that when we petition the Most High, the true Almighty, that the true Almighty steps in and give us the consciousness. Somebody will have the consciousness to say the right thing, because something must be right. Something must be right with this. And we just have to have enough sense to identify what's right with it.
All right, Brother Satawi.
Yes, sir. You know my history and my story, David. You know, our daughter, we was running our program at the Culture Center, and she was shot by her husband. And we had to ultimately close down and move on. And, you know, and what happened in that process, I was commissioned to help with the raising of my grandson. He's doing pretty good right now. He's 21, and, you know, he's doing pretty good. And, you know, but he was a mess, because when this happened to him, he was like, you know, to see his father gun his mother down, he was like 3 years old, and that had a tremendous impact on his life. And so me and him, we moved to New Orleans, and then that's when I began to help, making sure that I was there to be able to help him heal. And from, you know, from that, we went on to, you know, him learning tennis and several other different things. And, you know, I hear what Sabrina is sharing about the whole trauma thing. And, you know, it just brought back those memories to me when, you know, me and Cynthia went through that. And
Professor Tyler, I don't mean to cut you off, because you just brought back a memory. Now you told this part of the story, and I want to ask you a personal question that you don't have to answer. And you don't mind me telling, because not only his daughter, she was paralyzed, still paralyzed from that incident. And but not only that, that same young man put the gun up into his wife's head as well. Satavi's wife. And Satawi, yeah. as a man, to see that your family went through this, how did that go? How did you deal with that?
I don't know if I'm totally healed from that, you know what I mean? Because, you know, I think about when you said, you know, what happened to you in the kindergarten, you know, and so that's what I'm saying, you know, the these issues, they affect us. Basically, really, for the rest of our lives, you know, especially if we don't go through any type of therapy and get any type of therapeutic healing. So, you know, we didn't do the therapy route, and I was my grandson's therapist, because basically what he needed love. And so I tried to provide and protect the surrounding with much love as possible. That tender age, and help nurture him, and you know, and we had a great relationship, still have a great relationship, and I'm just thankful that I was able to be there, you know, and help guide through that process. So it does have an impact on you when, you know, you have a family member that's gunned down and paralyzed in a wheelchair, and then for the young man, before taking his own life, put the gun to my wife's head, put it to her head. First, put it to her stomach, and then put it to her head, and She said what she did was she didn't look at him because she didn't want him to flinch. So, you know, and, you know, that was her strategy of dealing with that at the time and at the moment. But it really bothered her for, you know, for years and still does bother her. So, you know, we all have these traumas and dramas in our
Yeah, that's my whole point. That's my whole point. What I was trying to at least see, Sabrina, even those like me, Brother Satai, and quite a few people on this call right now, with us right now. Yeah, we out here helping people, serving people, doing some good stuff with people. Because that's in our nature, in our hearts. And some of these times, these things drive us to these things. But even we, us, what you may call the ones who are supposed to be out here serving, we have issues as well. Issues from way back when. And so that's why I say in the black community, that's why what you're doing is needed so much, because even those of us who are out here serving got some issues that we need to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, again, I encourage all of us, because, you know, the mind is a powerful thing. And if you can change your mindset, you can change so many other things. So back to you, Sabrina. You ready to say something?
No, I said absolutely. First of all, brother, I'm, you know, sorry that you guys had to go through that experience, and I can only imagine, like, how traumatic it is. I do know that sometimes, especially for your grandson, you know, the counseling can be an integral piece of him healing, right? Because we don't know everything, right? And sometimes you just need an outlet that's impartial and it's not, like, in your immediate circle. You know, I just want to put that out there. You know, my son, when he was on heroin, he overdosed a total of 9 times.
Mm.
One time in my face, right, in my house in Columbia. And one time was at my mom's house. I had to fly to Baltimore City down there, you know, just, I suffered anxiety. I would wake up out of my sleep and it felt like I was having a heart attack, you know, and I, you know, had these heart palpitations. It was awful for me. Right. But and people kept saying, get his insurance up. I mean, people were so insensitive to what I was going through. You know what I mean? You better keep it. And this is my family members now. You better keep your insurance up because he's going to kill himself and all this stuff. And he was in treatment, California, Vegas. He went everywhere to treatment. And I remember when his first treatment, he was in Philadelphia. And this guy told me, and, you know, the guy was from Maryland. He was like, yeah, you're going to be the cause of your son dying. This is what these people told me, right? And mind you, I went to school for addiction counseling. He told me I was going to be the cause of him dying because I was pacifying him and, you know, always there for him. I needed to just cut the, you know, the strings and just let him go and do his thing. And when he hit bottom, he'll be fine. But I knew my son, and I knew if I gave up on him, he wouldn't have anyone. And he wouldn't care if I was living anymore, right? So I prayed, and when I tell you, I gave it to the Lord. I literally gave it to the Lord. That's all I could do. And I remember riding down Centennial Lane one day in Columbia on my way to the store, and I just cried so hard. And I'm driving crying, too. I mean, I was just bawling out of control. And I just let the Lord know, like, I have done all I can do, and I just need you to step up. And when I tell you, like, 6 seconds later, my phone rang, somebody stepped up, and I knew that it was God, right? And so that's what I'm talking about, the faith piece. If people have never felt this, they don't know what it's like. If you don't know that God is real, then you don't know, right? And if you can't experience it, then, you know, people can't expect you to understand it. And I just want people to understand that there is a way out, right? There is a God. You know, I'm living proof of it, right? And I know it. Like, you cannot tell me that this was not God, right? Because, like I said, it was just instant. And it's not the only time I've prayed to some really insignificant things that have happened. You know what I mean? Just like waking up without an alarm clock. You know, just simple things, right? Because I've always had a faith. I've always had faith in God, even in my lowest moments. And my son is here. He's a great dad. He has custody of his son right now, two and a half months old, will be 3 months old soon. When I tell you, he is like a walking testimony. You know what I'm saying? And now he prays, right? Because I've been praying so much. He is praying. So I think that once we get, you know, together and we can collaborate on some more things and just keep spending time together, we will find a way to turn this village into a bigger village and a bigger village, and we will start healing. And we will start helping each other. We will start helping the community, our families. And I'm just excited about where this could go. And I appreciate the information and the feedback and for all you guys being on here, because it definitely takes a village.
All right. Before we depart, Mr. Murphy, Mrs. Murphy, and Leroy, do you want to say anything in parting?
I just want to say thank you to everyone for sharing such personal details of things that they're going through and for the professional advice that's been presented. It is appreciated. Sometimes things look greener on the other side, and you think everybody's having a great time, but we all go through. If we're not going through, we're getting ready to go through. So I just want to thank you for the call tonight.
All right, thank you. Leroy or Mr. Murphy?
Yeah, David, and I want to thank everyone, and especially Mrs. Martin, for this wonderful presentation, mostly because of the fact that mental health is really about who you are, how you conduct yourself, and how you interact with other people. And unfortunately, when things are not quite right, it causes friction, confusion, and frustration, and wars, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And so that's where a lot of the trauma comes in, because not only is it mental, it also turns into a physical situation. And I'm a two-time war veteran. I was born and raised in Baltimore City. And if I, as an individual, do not have trauma, something is wrong with my eyes. Something is wrong with my environment, because as all of you know, it's around everywhere. I was born and lived around Pennsylvania Avenue most of my life, and most of y'all know the old story that you have to have a gun and two knives to survive on Pennsylvania Avenue. And so the deal is that, you know, the whole concept is that trauma is everywhere, and none of us escape. And if you don't get some sort of help, the question is, who's the fool? Back to you, Dave.
All right.
Dave, if I can add.
Wait a minute. I'm going to just get him in. I'll be right back to you, sir. Leroy, go ahead. You want to share anything?
Just really quick, I think that this was a excellent topic to be able to deal with and talk with. And I'll just reiterate what Ms. Catherine said, that, you know, people showing their, you know, talking about their personal life and everything like that, it helps someone else to be able to understand and walk through their personal life, because you never know what someone else is going through and be able to do that. So this has been a great, great program. So thank you.
Welcome. Go ahead, sir. You got it.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I know supremely people don't want to come forward. I'm not too proud to come forward with the medical issues that I have. I have two or three neurologists. I have psychiatrists, two psychologists, a psychiatrist, three neurologists, primary doctors, social workers. They call me every week. I don't sleep at night. I have PTSD. I'm a former player. I got a crack in my skull. They're watching me. I'm a time bomb. David and them know, I talked to them about the acts of suicide. But God is keeping me.
Amen.
God is keeping me because I am in crisis. I didn't diagnose myself. The medical team did. So it's real.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Amen. Yes. God bless you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when two, three are gathered, and you also know there's always hope. You know, but, you know, they say knock and the door shall be open. Seek and you shall find. Ask and it shall be given to you. And so we had to start doing some of these things, you know, we start asking, you know, ask for some help and start believe that you can get some help, because God, like I said, I can tell you, anybody know me knows that I know that God has came to me in so many different ways, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, everything, because I was asking, I was seeking, and it's an honor and privilege. That's why I'm able to be here today. To even talk about this subject matter. You know, so sometimes, you know, to be quite frank with you, you know, like my brother and my sister-in-law, Kathleen Murphy, see, you know, they military, you know, they made a career out of military, but they know in order to, you just can't jump out on the field and go to a battlefield without, you know, certain things you had to prepare for and things like that. You know, you get, I mean, in life, also, just like the rest of us out here, you know, if you haven't been through, so how can you help somebody? Sometimes you have to be an overcomer to even help somebody else to overcome. And so sometimes we have to go through it. And life is not that easy sometimes, especially when you're born into certain situations. But there is hope because, like I say, most of us, we survived it. May not have been 100%, but I believe that as elders, parents, uncles, aunts, and everything else, that we have to make a better way for our children and our children's children. And that's what I'm doing as we speak. That's why we bring these type of subject matters up, because if not us, then who? If not now, then when? You know, we can't wait tomorrow. We can't wait on, because our children are suffering now. Our people, not just our children, we are suffering now. And if we don't be our brothers' keeper, our sisters' keepers, then who will? And so and that's why I say, you know, I appreciate you all so much for, you know, for all the different angles that you come from, because it does take that village. And we are the village. And we are part of the village. And, but, you know, there's a whole host of us out there who's right now, as we speak, contemplating suicide or talking about thinking about killing someone else or hurting someone else. There's people right now, you hear it all over this country, people taking out factories, shooting up this, and just shooting people at random because they're so frustrated, don't know how to deal with stuff. And even in Baltimore, you see sometimes, you know, and Daniel was right, this is not a city thing, a black people thing, this is a state, it's a worldwide thing. Because even in Baltimore, they closed down all the mental hospitals and everything, just send the people out into the streets, you know, without any care, any hope. And you wonder why so many people are homeless and why so many things are beginning to happen, because it's a trickle-down effect. But again, Sabrina, I appreciate you so much, you know, for taking time to be with us this evening. We see, because you unlocked some things that, you know, like some of us say, was taboo in our communities. You know, we don't like even talking about these things sometimes, but it's about high time we start. And again, for those of y'all who's in the area, Sabrina has already put the information out for us. And if you could come there Saturday, and if not, well, I know Sabrina will be working with us. And so sometimes, you know, because, you know, we don't have to physically be everywhere sometimes these days and times. You know, we can record things, you know, videotape things. And so I'm going to try to do that, you know, this Saturday if they allow me to. So that, you know, we can take some footage from that. But at the, on the other hand, you know, Sabrina and the trauma team here can work with Dr. Pender and Brother Michael Thomas in North Carolina, and Dr. Pender in Virginia. And we got people all over the country that, you know, we can start these type of programs or these type of discussions and bring in some real help. You know, we can talk about it, but now, like Sabrina and them do, they just don't talk about it. They got solutions. They got help. You know, they got all types. They partner with all types of organizations that can fit people's needs, you know, where they're at. And so, again, Sabrina, in closing, I would like you to share a little bit more about your event, and then we're going to shut it down.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that Mr. McKenzie Jr. Received it, because I resent it to you, sir, and I hope you received it, because I think this time I got it. So, again, the event is going to be out. This is our first summit, community summit on trauma, and it's going to be this Saturday coming up from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. We will be having light refreshments. It's going to be at the Christian Baptist Fellowship Church, 3702 West Rogers Avenue. That's Dr. Humphrey's church. And we're just looking for people to come out. We're going to have some community leaders, and we're going to have some speakers, and we're going to talk about the trauma, like how to heal it, and a gamut of other situations that people could go through, like the, you know, the physical health piece, along with the mental health, substance abuse. We're going to talk about, you know, how to recognize the signs of a pedophile, domestic violence, and like anything else that the community would like to talk about, we're going to speak on it.
Okay. So like I said, I'm looking forward to being there. And again, I want to thank each and every one of you for your time and your patience with, you know, being on the call, and those who was on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. And we appreciate each and every one of you. But, you know, just keep this in mind. Like the old saying, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And, you know, we have so many people's minds, it's been torn and tattered because of drama and trauma. And if you can help alleviate some of that drama and the trauma from people's lives, then they can start living productive lives and maybe reach back and help somebody else as well. And so, again, Sabrina, we thank you and looking forward to seeing you this Saturday. And I want to thank all the panelists with the National Black Unity News and all the people on the other platforms that have been listening. And I'm going to say good night to each and every one of you. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks,
everyone.
Thanks for having me. Good night.
Goodbye.